So we need to know our limits. There are characters, and I'm not saying this in a bad way, but there are characters that they can suck all your life out of you. If you keep them close, you will have no energy, no strength, no courage to move on in life. You need to be wiser than that. And this will bring up something that I was planning to talk about later on, about keeping our borders, the unifying distance that Yerdes Iglianos talks about. But we will see if we can talk about it soon. So there are characters that they're looking for someone to get attached to. And they get so attached that it's like there is no one else on earth, and they keep pushing this person to extremes that they're not healthy. You need to avoid these people. If you see that someone is a person that it's like, you know, you have the trees and then there are some bushes that they can be sucking from them, from the actual tree. This is not healthy. Everybody needs to have his own environment, his own activities, his own stuff. You can't live off someone else's life. It's not proper. And you need to put borders when you realize how much you can give and not give any further. You don't help the other person because they need to grow up. They need to stand on their two own feet. And you don't help yourself because this can suffocate you. And psychologically, you might start having issues if you push your limits too far. I don't know if that's what you meant. So we need to be very careful. When I first came to Australia, I was in Adelaide. One of my duties was to visit nursing homes, two or three nursing homes, and talk to the elderly. Keep them a bit of company if they wanted to say something. Now, there was this lady, she was very old. She thought that I was her doctor, and she thought that I was her husband, and she thought whatever she thought. She had dementia. But I could only stay there for the time that I could stay there for. I could not stay there all day. And when I was leaving, I knew that she would be sad and lonely. She would take, she had a couple of dolls, and she thought they were her children. So she would put them under, on the bed and cover them up with a doona or something. And she would use her food to feed them. Of course, the dolls can't eat. And you can understand the suffering there. But it wasn't for me to stay there and serve this person for the rest of my life. I was only there temporarily. I knew that this was what I was supposed to do. I did it as good as I could. I would talk to her. I would try to get her mind out of things. She wouldn't remember that I was there afterwards. It doesn't matter. But I could not dedicate my life to this purpose. This was not my purpose. This is the same with all of us. We have a purpose in life. We have a family. We have our children. We have everything. We cannot allow people to live their lives through us. It's not fair, it's not wise, it's not proper, it's not acceptable. That's not Christian. That's stupidity. And I'm saying it with full conscience that these people, they might be suffering, but at the same time, you can't destroy your spiritual life, and you can't destroy your actual life to help someone who, even if you do this, nothing much will change for them. If they suffer, they will keep suffering. If they don't help themselves to get out of this, if they can, because for someone who has dementia, sometimes it's unavoidable, but if they can get out of it and they don't do it themselves, you cannot be the one who will save them this way. You can't. So you need to protect yourself, protect your family, protect your sanity, and know your limits. Give as much as you can, and a little bit less, because if you give everything and you're tired and a temptation hits you, you will fall. But if you keep a little bit of reserve strength, if the tempter knocks on your door, you will have the energy to stand on your 2 feet. Does this answer your question? It's sad sometimes, but this is what we can do. And at the end of the day, we can pray for someone and God can find other ways. And if we think that we are irreplaceable, we have a very big idea for ourselves. Yeah. Everybody can be replaced if God wants. Anything else on that? So there are people, let's say in a monastery, that they think that they can become great ascetics. And they go to their elder, they go to their yerda, to their spiritual father, and they say what they believe about themselves. And yerdas might say to them, be patient, stay where you are, but they have this thought inside them that they can do all these things. It's the same if someone is married. When we are preoccupied with and think that we know what spiritually is more beneficial for us. But then if we don't practice vigilance in this instance, we will find ourselves messed up, because what we think and what God knows that is beneficial for us, they are two different things. They are not always the one and same thing. And because our vision is blurry when we have these sort of expectations and ideas about ourselves, then everything we will be thinking will not be clear. And we feel lonely, and then we might fall into loving material things because we get exhausted from these thoughts and we can't function properly. So someone who has such a view in life that they know everything and they know better, regardless what you tell them, they will most likely see it in a negative way. They will see it in the way they can see it. And you can't convince them even if you convince them. And if these people become monastics, good luck to their monastery. And if they get married, good luck to their families. Good luck to everyone around them. That's what thoughts can do to us. And that's what thoughts can do to us when we don't know our limits, we don't know ourselves, and we don't want to know ourselves. We become trouble for everyone around us, unfortunately. Anything on that?
What you just said just reminded me of one of the passions. You know, some people are passionate about food, and others are addicted to gambling, and others are addicted to other things. One of the things that people can get addicted to is their thoughts or their intellect. They enjoy exercising the intellect. That gives them a kick, a rush to understanding things, to be curious about things, to have thoughts. And I think that that's a trap that, I always thought that it's a good thing to exercise your mind. It's not a good thing, obviously, to overeat. It's not a good thing to oversleep. It's not a good thing. But I never thought it could be a bad thing to exercise your mind all the time.
To overthink.
To enjoy, to be curious about things, to continue to have, and let that fill up your whole heart so that God doesn't fit because of your intellect. I think that's one of the traps that I have encountered. So people become, I think the Greek word is hilogon, love their thoughts so much that they're attached to them. It's their passion. Their passion is that.
Yes. So some people, they love knowledge and they think that because of their knowledge, they can have an opinion about everything and they think about everything, they forget about God. But there are other people that they don't necessarily have a lot of knowledge, but they do a lot of thinking. They think and think and overanalyze things. That's also dangerous because we lose simplicity. And when we overanalyze things, we will definitely get trapped in our thoughts. And then the solutions might be just in front of us, and we might be going around in circles to find something, which might be so simple. Yes. For the first one, we need to know that our logic can only get to a certain point, and after that, we need to believe in God and pray and let God do things in our lives instead of us controlling everything, thinking that we know everything. And for the second one, if we think too much, we need to stop thinking that much. And how can you stop thinking when, for example, you have anxiety? You can't stop thinking, but you can distract yourself with other things. And one of the things could be prayer. And then another thing could be doing things for charity, doing things for a parish, doing things for the church. And if you keep busy with positive things, then your thoughts, they are associated with what you're doing at the moment, and you don't overthink everything. There are ways of dealing with things. It's just that if we think that we know everything, we will end up being left alone in life. And that's not nice. It's not nice. Anything else? Yerdas here says that when you don't have thoughts about everything, opinions about everything, that's when you get proper experience of things. Because your own thoughts about things and that you know everything, you think that you know what you should do, and you stop yourself from getting the proper experience of things. And that's important because without experience, we don't know what to do next time, and then we keep doing the same mistakes in life. Anything else here? No? Now, Yerdas talks about talking back to the thoughts, talking back to the logismus, to what the tempter will put in our mind. Some of the fathers, they say that this is a good thing to do, but it's also dangerous and it's not advisable to talk back to your thoughts. Because if you do talk back to your thoughts, you will end up having a discussion with your thought. And this discussion can start today and finish in 10 years. You can never stop thinking more and more scenarios about one thing. And that's not healthy. So instead of talking back to the thought, what we should do is say to the thought, I'm not going to associate with you. So basically reject the thought and move on. And rejection is the best thing that we can ever do and the best practice of vigilance that could help us to move on. Otherwise, it's very dangerous if we get involved with what could happen and keep thinking and talking back to the devil, talking back to the logismo, to the thought. The conversation that we need to have is not with the thought, but is with Christ. So we reject the thought, we deny the thought, and then we pray. This is the conversation with Christ. And maybe we can briefly talk about what we said that we were going to mention before, about the unifying distance between people, because this is something that can teach us also where we should stop thinking regarding what happens between us and other people. We've talked about it maybe before. Does anyone know how to explain what we mean by unifying distance? Even if it's not perfect, we will say a few things more, but if anybody can think or have heard what we could call unifying distance. No one? Difficult? Any ideas? Μακριά και αγαπημένη is just distance. There is no unity then. It's μακριά. So if you say to someone μακριά και αγαπημένα, there is no unity. You can say it, but you won't see them again. Anyone else? Well, that was funny. All right. Γέροντας Εμιλιανός talks about the unifying distance. And if we practice it in the proper way, our thoughts, the thoughts that they will be generated in our mind will be less, the thoughts regarding others and the people around us. So what do we mean by that? I will explain it as good as I can, but of course, I hope it makes sense.